Welcome to Your Turn, Mike Causey. Glad to have you with us. We're here every Wednesday at 10 a.m., and we're going to be talking money and turkey today, not necessarily in that order. My guests are Steve Watkins. He is editor of the Federal Times. Stephen Losey, senior writer for the Federal Times. And we're going to sort of take up the subjects du jour, including the announcement this morning that we are expecting that the U.S. Postal Service is going to proposing to stop Saturday delivery of mail, first-class mail. They apparently will continue to deliver packages, but the first-class mail, the Valentines and things you might expect, will be a thing of the past if Congress lets them get away with it. Also want to talk about sequestration, and this is something Jen said. I think 2 years ago, none of us had heard the term sequestration or had used it. And now it's everywhere, along with furloughs and buyouts and layoffs.
My wife accused me of making up that word.
Yeah, right. It's like derecho. You know, you go away for a summer and it comes back and something this sequestration threat, you know, we've been through this now for a couple of years. We've been talking about the threat to the from the high three to the high five, and medical health insurance vouchers, and the chain COLA, and a variety of horrors that were heading the way of federal workers, postal people, and retirees, and none of them happened. They just fizzled at the last minute or were dropped. Even the idea of a continued pay freeze was dropped, at least for now. But this seems to be a more real threat, this furlough situation. And can you give us some background as to why we're here and when is the D-Day?
The D-Day is supposedly March 1st. Now, President Obama is pushing Congress to, if they can't get some broader deal that averts sequestration, essentially kick the can down the road for a second time, which seems to be the only thing Washington can do these days, just delay making these hard decisions. But the sequestration was set up the other year when we had that debt ceiling, that fight over the debt ceiling. The Congress, the quote-unquote compromise Congress came up with was to set up a super committee to figure out a way to reduce the deficit. And if they couldn't strike a deal, then these sequestration budget cuts would go into effect, and they would be mandatory cuts evenly divided between domestic and defense spending. And it was supposed to go into effect January 2nd. At the very last minute, they came up with a solution that just pushed it back to March 1st. So now here we are. We're, 3 weeks away from it now? We're looking down the barrel of a gun, and federal agencies are finally starting to at least publicly acknowledge, hey, this might happen. And they're starting to get some plans are starting to trickle out of the bureaucracy.
Well, and the idea behind this is and some agencies may not furlough at all. We've heard from a couple who said they won't, that they're going to do other things. They'll freeze hiring. They'll get rid of their temps or whatnot. But defense and others have put out a thing, and they're talking about 22 furlough days. That would be one day a week between March 1 and the end of the fiscal year, which is September 30th.
That's right. That's the number.
Now, we got some really good questions from people, emails this morning. And one of the guys, he says, can I beat the furlough by taking vacation for that day?
Unfortunately, no, you can't. You got to take the furlough one way or another. You won't be able to say, well, boss, why don't you just take a week of my vacation time and just strike that from the books and make that count as my furlough. That won't fly with them. You got to take a week of unpaid leave.
Okay. So they want to save money, and they also want to send a message that this is a 20% pay cut for people for that period.
Essentially, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Another question. If agencies are required to furlough employees, say 1 out of 5 days a week, there will be those of us deemed essential that will have to work all 5 days, or is everybody in the pool on this one? Those on furloughs, do they continue to maintain the same benefits, leave accrual, service time toward retirement annuity calculations? From your previous column, I learned that the high three is not adversely affected, but what about a reduction in service time calculations? Lastly, do furloughs require that agencies rethink the alternative work schedule format due to the shortage of employees? I'll be listening, Rob.
The first question, it's probably not going – not everybody will be furloughed. There will likely be some people who are deemed essential who might be exempted. Defense Department has kind of left themselves a little bit of wiggle room, so they don't furlough people who are absolutely necessary to, say, keeping the war effort in Afghanistan running. So these furloughs are going to be broad, and they're going to hit most everybody, but probably not everybody. And what was the second question?
Second question says, do people maintain the same benefits, leave, accrual, service time toward retirement calculations, et cetera?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay. And lastly, do furloughs require agencies rethink the alternative work schedule format due to the shortage of employees?
You know, that's a good question. I'm not entirely sure about that. I imagine it is going to require managers to think a lot more creatively about how they staff their offices to make sure the gears don't entirely grind to a halt. So they are probably going to have to sit down and look at their alternative work schedule and figure out what they can do and what they can't do under this new austere environment we're operating under.
In the government-wide shutdown 95-96, the winter of 95 and 96, people were furloughed, but then when they got back, Congress voted to pay them. So it was not a furlough. It was really a paid vacation, although they didn't know it at the time. Last year, when the FAA had to furlough some people, when they came back, the Congress said, we're not going to pay them. And I believe the Department of Transportation lawyers found a loophole or something and managed to pay these people a relatively small number.
Yeah, correct? I think they found some change under the cushions.
Yeah, right, yeah, looked at like, but so there's no guarantee this time that people will be made whole, correct?
No, absolutely not. And your point about the mid-90s shutdown is very true. Congress did go back and make them whole, but that was a very, very different environment. The nation was not nearly as focused on the deficit then as they are now, and there also wasn't this this feeling among some quarters that federal employees are overpaid and underworked and kind of a hostility towards federal employees. So I think if there is a furlough, I imagine we probably will see some people saying, hey, these guys didn't cause this problem. We should do right by them. But I could see some Republican lawmakers saying, everybody's going to have to take a bite, and we don't have the money to give to federal employees for work they didn't do.
Steny Hoyer and Frank Wolf will say, give them the money and everybody else will laugh.
Probably. I think so, yeah. I think the probability, high probability, is they will not get paid for that. And you just have to go back to the original motive here for what's driving all this, which is to cut spending. So I don't see it happening.
Have you seen yet a dollar figure as to what a 20% sustained cut would save the government, or what the daily payroll is?
You know, that's a good question, and I don't have those numbers
okay.
right in
I've
front of me.
I've seen the daily payroll, but yeah. it varies somewhat. Okay, got another question here. This is very timely from Lewis, and he says, I was talking with my boss, who's getting close to retirement, about the furlough/buyout. I thought he would be looking forward to buyouts being offered. However, he pointed out that if he waits until January 1, 2014, then he'll get 100% of his sick leave credited under the FERS system. If he takes a buyout or retires before January 1, he'll get only 50%. So he's planning on waiting out the bumpy ride. I haven't seen this variable mentioned, so I figured I'd toss it to your discussion today. But that is correct, isn't it?
Yes, that's a very good point. President Obama in 2009 signed the so-called FERS sick leave credit. Basically, how this works is if you're a FERS employee and you retire after next January 1st, you get all the sick leave you've saved up gets tacked on to the amount of time that you've spent in the government. So if you've got, 6 months of sick leave left and you worked 30 years, you get credit for 30 years and 6 months. Now, the law was written so that it gets sort of phased in, and Lewis's point is absolutely true. Until next January 1st, if you retire, you get 50% of your sick leave. So if you're nearing retirement and you've got a lot of sick leave saved up, it might be worth it for you to just hold on just, 11 months longer.
Right. And there are people in government who have amassed up to a year's sick leave, and that makes a big difference in their annuity for life. Take a short break here. I'll be right back talking with Steve Watkins and Steve Losey from the Federal Times. What you don't know about federal pay, benefits, and retirement can cost you. Get the answers you need with a free publication from NARF, the experts on federal retirement and benefits. Download FAQs about your federal benefits today at fedfaqs.org. NARF, the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association, unravels the most complex rules and requirements feds encounter. Download your free guide today at fedfaqs.org. That's fedfaqs.org.
What are the challenges of measuring unobserved events? How do unobserved events differ from infrequent events? Are there data estimation methods that can assist public managers in measuring unobserved events? And what agencies are applying such methods to develop appropriate data-driven strategies and approaches? Join host Michael Keegan and John Whitley, author of a new IBM Center report, Five Methods for Measuring Unobserved Events, a case study of federal law enforcement, as they explore these questions and more. Next week on a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors.
Register now for AFSCIA's 12th Annual Homeland Security Event, February 26th through 28th at the Grand Hyatt, Washington. Focusing on working together, keeping the nation safe, this is the venue where you'll hear firsthand about the critical issues facing our country, including cybersecurity, critical infrastructure protection, identity management, information and intelligence sharing, emergency management, mobile communications, and more. Speakers from all levels of government, military, and industry will participate. And contractors and agencies will showcase the latest security products and solutions in the exposition. New this year is a small business matchmaking symposium. This event is proudly sponsored by AT&T, InfoZen, Kinetic North America, URS, and Verizon. Register to attend or exhibit at www.afcea.org, keyword homeland. That's AFCEA.org.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
The Washington Wizards are back.
Spins, fades, banks, scores, and one. Okafor.
Up court to Crawford. No-look pass. Ariza. Stump to it.
Crawford drives baseline. Whips it in the corner. Sheldon Mack for three.
Single-game tickets are on sale now. Call 202-661-5050. That's 202-661-5050. Or buy your tickets online at washingtonwizards.com/tickets.
I'm on a mission to spread the word about COPD through music. COPD stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. My grandfather suffered from symptoms of it, and COPD is the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S. I'm Billy Ray Cyrus, and I drive for COPD. Looks like people are starting to get the message. Anyone age 35 and older who has smoked as little as 100 cigarettes could be at risk. Visit driveforcopd.com today and talk to your doctor.
Working together, keeping the nation safe, is the focus of AFSCIA's 12th Annual Homeland Security Event, February 26th through 28th at the Grand Hyatt, Washington. Speakers from all levels of government, military, and industry will dialogue on cybersecurity, critical infrastructure protection, identity management, information and intelligence sharing, emergency management, mobile communications, and more. Register to attend or exhibit at AFSCIA.org, keyword homeland. That's AFSCIA.org, keyword homeland.
Welcome back to Your Turn. It's Mike Causey. I'm talking with Steve Watkins, editor of the Federal Times, and Stephen Losey, a senior writer for them. And we've been hitting the furlough and sequester waterfront pretty hard. Got another question here from Steve. He's with the Air National Guard, and he says, does the threat of a furlough impact civilians working for the National Guard? Will this impact the dual status individuals who have a civilian position and a military position linked together? Straight civilian who also happens to be in the Guard or Reserves. And I remember when I was in the Guard, we called those guys Aztecs. And they, I don't know, there was some technical term for it, but they were members of the Army in that case, and they also worked for it, so they were in the unit and they also worked for it as a civilian.
Yeah, I'm not 100% up on exactly how the furlough might affect reserve employees differently, but what I suspect is, yes, it would affect them just like regular federal employees, regular civilian employees. You would be furloughed, and they would probably just take that out of your civilian time.
Okay, could be. I remember you seeing a Japanese picket line one time, and there was these pictures of hundreds of people, and they were all wearing red armbands, but they continued to work. But the red armband showed that they would be striking if they could. And that way it kept productivity up. And I can see where they would say, as a civilian, you're furloughed, but as a member of the Guard, you are expected to report for duty. You know. So.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and back in the day, they used to call them essential and non-essential. And, you know, we'd hear it every time there was a snow day or something, and they'd say non-essential employees can stay home. And it hurt people's feelings. You know? So they changed it. The designation now, I believe, is emergency and non-emergency.
Yeah, because people. Everybody is a beautiful and unique snowflake.
Exactly. It's like Lake Wobegon, you know. What you were saying is that if there is a furlough, particularly a place like defense, most people are going to be furloughed.
Yeah, I mean, they're the hold back on certain jobs that are absolutely, that they absolutely positively can't do without, where if they would lose you, that it would impact national security, or it might cause a risk to safety. You know, if people might get harmed because you're not doing your job, they would probably exempt you. But we're looking at the vast majority of defense employees, and probably a lot of other employees in a lot of other agencies getting furloughed.
Yeah, Steve Watkins, we were talking during the break about the possibility that there might be furloughs even if sequestration is avoided.
Yeah, DOD is being hit especially hard in all this, and that's because of the CR, the Continuing Resolution, which is the temporary budget measure, and that expires March 27th. And essentially that has kept government spending at 2012 levels, plus about 0.6%, so pretty negligible. But for DOD, that's especially a big hit because they were expecting, as all agencies do, a regular annual appropriation. And Defense Secretary Panetta has estimated that the difference between the Defense Department running on a CR and running on an appropriation or something close to what President Obama proposed in his budget is about 5% or $11 billion. So because they're on a CR and they are assuming the CR is going to be extended for the full year, that's essentially the Pentagon eyes that as a $11 billion cut for them. So they're feeling that in a big way, and most of that impact is going to fall on the what they call O&M operations and maintenance accounts, so shipyards, arsenals, depots. So a lot of the maintenance, training, and that kind of activity is really going to be slowed down significantly. And should furloughs occur, that's where you're going to see them in a big way. At the shipyards and the depot hangars and so forth. And I think that is the big question is, are they going to have to resort to furloughs even if there is not a sequestration, if somehow magically they manage to avert it? It looks like they probably still will have to furlough some people, some employees. And the other thing is we've talked a lot about furloughs, but there's an awful lot of other things going on. The Pentagon has already put in place some immediate hiring freezes. They're laying off term and temporary employees, which number about 46,000 across the Defense Department. It's not to say all of them are being laid off, but that gives you a sense of how many are potentially could see some layoffs. And, of course, cutbacks on travel, training, and bonuses and that kind of thing. So, yeah, expect a lot of pain throughout DOD, and of course also in the big civilian heavy support agencies like Defense Logistics Agency and Defense Finance Accounting Service. So I think we're probably going to see a lot of pain, whether there's sequestration or not.
Well, I'm thinking of well, you know, we're so Beltway-centric here. We think about the impact on the Washington area. And one reason we haven't really felt the impact of the recession is all of the federal jobs here and the defense contractors and people like us who live off the federal government in one way or another, six or seven jobs for every one fed. But in some of these smaller communities where the primary employer maybe is the VA hospital or the primary employer is a defense base or a shipyard, Norfolk's example.
Right.
You know, the IRS is the major employer in some areas. The Department of Justice, the Bureau of Prisons, is the major employer in some cities where there's a federal prison. This could have a tremendous economic impact on the country, couldn't
it? No question. And that's why we saw President Obama yesterday come out and say, we need to avert this, at least a short-term deal, because this really does threaten the strength of the recovery at this point and could actually reverse it. We already saw the gross GDP fall last quarter. And there's some fear that that could continue should we fall into a sequestration. And you're exactly right. It's those small towns that really live off of a lot of these federal facilities, whether it's a military base or a VA hospital.
Right, and the stock market, just look at your thrift savings plan, has been going gangbusters,
right.
But that could reverse overnight.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, keying off of what Steve said, I mean, just people like just talk about, federal spending as if it isn't in this bubble, but there really is a ripple effect, because if you are a federal employee, say, at the Red River Depot in Texas, and you're furloughed one day a week, then, as you said, that's 20% out of your paycheck. Maybe you're not taking your family out to a restaurant, or maybe you're, cutting your grocery budget in half. And that impacts the small businesses that make up your community, and maybe they have to lay people off. So it just kind of keeps cascading if you start cutting some of these federal employees' salaries that are out there throughout the country.
Well, I remember when the BRAC people were moving around and moving in, particularly into Northern Virginia, and the defense made a statement that we were talking about traffic and parking and the economic impact, and I believe they said for every federal worker that moves into the area or every job that's created, that in turn creates 6 private sector jobs.
Mm. Yeah, interesting. But and we haven't even talked about contractors. There's no doubt tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of contractors whose jobs are on the line as well with all this. And I can tell you at across the government, agencies have already started cutting quite severely. They're back there on their contracting and service contracts. And we're already seeing, for instance, at Lockheed Martin just announced yesterday they're offering a buyout to 350 of their employees at their IT division. General Dynamics announced last quarter that they are devaluing their IT operation by $2 billion. And so we can expect to see a lot more of that.
Yeah, and I know you do too, a number of defense or government contractors, young and old, and they are very nervous about this, because if they get furloughed, for sure they're not going to get paid. Don't do that. And if a government agency shuts down, then your job shuts. You can't go in and work when the government employee is not there.
That's right.
Okay, on to the story du jour, the U.S. Postal Service. They are apparently going to, I don't know if they've announced it yet, but the Associated Press was reporting earlier this morning that the Postal Service was going to announce that they were going to suspend Saturday delivery of first-class mail, but continue to deliver packages. And, we were talking before the show, does that mean junk mail? Yes, but no real mail, no postcards, no letters. And what does this mean?
Well, it's going to mean a big food fight, I can tell you, in Congress, because, of course, the letter carriers are going to fight this and their unions. This announcement is going on right now, actually, and we're still awaiting details. But the way I understand it is the Postal Service believes that it is legally able to cease Saturday delivery of mail, and they are planning to do that in August. However, continue their package delivery. Now, every year, the annual appropriations that Congress passes to fund the government has a little clause in there saying, no way will the Postal Service ever cut back on six-day delivery. And, in fact, the CR that's in place extends that. So there's certain to be a big legal fight over this as to whether the Postal Service is on legally sound grounds to stop Saturday delivery. But the Postal Service is really desperate. They have been for a couple years now. And they have estimated that cutting back from 6 to 5 day delivery is going to save them about $3 billion a year. Now, it's going to be a little less than that if they continue with the package delivery. But it sounds like they are proceeding ahead and essentially daring Congress to step in and prevent them from doing that and thus sending them to financial oblivion. Now, last year there was some compromise in Congress, or some discussion anyway, with Senator Lieberman and Congressman Issa on this notion of five-day delivery. So it has a little support, of course. Senator Lieberman, who last year was chairman of the Homeland Security Government Affairs Committee, which oversees the Postal Service, he's no longer there. Senator Carper, who has replaced him as chair of that important committee, it remains to be seen whether he's going to support this. But essentially, this is clearly designed to start a big debate in Congress and get the ball rolling on some sort of postal reform. We heard last week Steve was sitting down with Steny Hoyer, who said, don't expect postal reform for at least a couple months. That's probably still the case because of sequestration and all the immediate budget issues that Congress has to deal with. But what the Postal Service is doing with this move is essentially trying to get postal reform way up high on the priority list for Congress.
Yeah. Could this also be the category of what we call a Washington Monument cut? I want to hold the answer for that till we get back. Take a short break here on Federal News Radio.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
For those of you who like to check your connection speed, you can go to broadbandreports.com. You can get their speed test. You can test your upload and download speed. I like to do that periodically. Sometimes my Fios download speed gets up to 16 megabits per second, but this morning I had 10 down and 3 up. And you've got 60 megabits per second. I'd love to have that kind of bandwidth, but 60 could be overkill. But I'd say anything more than 30 is probably not worth the money.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
The Washington Capitals are back.
Ovechkin down low, they score! Matt Hendricks, tic-tac-toe!
Back to Green, he's at the top of the right circle. Ovechkin, he scores! There it is, number one of the season!
Single game tickets are on sale now. Call 202-661-5050. That's 202-661-5050. Or buy your tickets online at Ticketmaster.com.
Hi, this is O'Donna Matthews. What does three decades of service add up to? For the Capital Area Food Bank, it includes these important numbers. Distributing 25 million pounds of food to nearly 500,000 people through a network of 700 partner agencies. 30 years, it's a long time. But the mission continues to make sure that no one is left hungry. To learn more, contribute, or volunteer, visit CapitalAreaFoodBank.org.
Come back to Foggy Bottom for homecoming at the George Washington University on February 9th and 10th in 2013. Join GW men's basketball on Saturday, February 9th, when they take on the Butler Bulldogs and commemorate the 20th anniversary of their trip to the Sweet 16. The GW women play Butler on Sunday and celebrate the 40th anniversary of Title IX. Visit gwsports.com/homecoming and get your homecoming tickets today.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
Today is the day to make the switch, to choose to save money with Ackerman Security Systems. Why Ackerman? Security is what they do. With Ackerman, you get the professionalism of the Washington area's only UL and CSAA 5 Diamond Certified Monitoring Center for just $18.95 a month. If you're paying more, you can switch for free and start saving today. Why wait? Call Ackerman today and receive up to 3 months of basic monitoring free. Call 888-999-1070 or AckermanSecurity.com.
The strange recent weather may or may not be a sign of global warming, but a University of Maryland engineer says we better prepare. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change says increasing ocean temperatures will cause rising global water levels. Bilal Ayoub, a University of Maryland engineer, used their 2007 report, along with local geographical data, to predict future effects in Washington, D.C.
The impact is going to be significant.
Even using low-end estimates, Ayoub says within a century, areas that could be inundated with water, especially in a storm surge, include the airport, Kennedy Center, archives, National Gallery, and some embassies.
This is not counting the metro and flooding in the tubes and even flooding utility lines.
He says we should start planning now.
See if engineering is ready to start offering solutions that are cost-effective to deal with the situation that we have a changing climate.
With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn, talking with Steve Watkins and Steve Losey from the Federal Times. A good discussion here about the pros and cons. I guess there aren't many pros, but some of the things that will happen to people if they're furloughed. And Steve Watkins said that he thinks that given the situation with the continuing resolution, that even if there is if sequestration is avoided, it is still possible defense could have some furloughs just because for money reasons. Before the break, I was asking you the magic words, Washington Monument Cut. And if you've been around D.C. a long time, you know that the Washington Monument Cut is when a federal agency's budget is threatened in some way or some services are threatened by the Congress. They pick the service that they provide that's the most visible and the most inflammatory, if you will. And in the example, it would be the Interior Department. They control the National Park Service, who control the Washington Monument. So what happens is, and spring break is coming up, thousands of kids from all over the country come into D.C., and one of the things they want to do is go up in the monument, which they can't now because of the earthquake, but normally they would do that, and the Park Service says, sorry, thanks to Congress, we've had to shut this down, and then the people call their families, and the families call the congressman, and the Interior's budget is restored. Could this postal thing, this going to five-day delivery, could this be a Washington Monument cut?
I don't think so. I mean, it is. They are obviously trying to grab the most attention, the most attention to their problems. But it's not like they're the boy who cried wolf here. The Postal Service has been in dire financial straits for many years, losing billions of dollars a year, and they've been pleading over and over with Congress, saying, "You tell us to act like a business, give us the flexibility to do that." An actual private sector business, in the face of declining revenues, would scale back on their operations. And Congress often restricts them from doing that because no congressman wants to lose a post office in his district, for example. So the Postal Service is kind of in this worst possible situation of being neither fish nor fowl. They're not a private sector business, but they're also not entirely government either, because they don't get the vast majority of their funds from congressional appropriations. They get it from revenue, from stamps, and from package delivery. So I think their problems are definitely very legitimate. They are in dire, dire straits.
And let me add to that, they actually are saying that they may well run out of money this year, and that's because their borrowing authority with the Treasury Department is essentially used up. And they said that last year it didn't happen, but that's because they defaulted on two major payments to their retiree health care plan, each about $5 billion, a little more than that. And they have to essentially make the same payment again this year and in the next couple of years. And because of those, last year they suffered for the full fiscal year something like a $16 billion loss, which is astounding. Now, You know, the other thing about Steve's point, which I agree with, this is not just pandering or trying to make a statement. They have figured this out to be $3 billion in savings, which they sorely need. It allows them essentially to cut back also more on their workforce, and that's the biggest cost that the Postal Service has.
Well, you know, coming at it from another angle, the Postal Service has been doing very well in its package business, as I understand it. They've increased it over the years, and they've made some inroads. One of the advantages that they have is that they deliver on Saturday, whereas FedEx and UPS, will deliver on Saturday, but you need to specify it, and sometimes you have to pay for it. And the other thing is, and I looked this up on the FedEx website, they say that they reach about 90% of the American public with their service. The Postal Service reaches 100% of the public. It has to. I mean, mm-hmm. if you're sending a package to Nome, Alaska, it goes for the same rate as it would if it were a much shorter distance in a more accessible place.
I've read that they even send letter carriers down with donkeys and
yeah.
mules to go deliver mail to some very remote Native American tribes. So, yeah, they literally do go to everybody. And that is something that is very special about the Postal Service and that they are trying to hold on to.
Well, you know, harkening back to the Ben Franklin days when it was a universal service, and the poorest person, if they had a penny or two pennies for a stamp, they could get something delivered. And with this concept making it a quasi-corporation, they seem to have lost some of that feeling. I mean, not only they have, but certainly the members of Congress have.
Yeah, and, you know, the big problem, really, that the Postal Service faces is its mail delivery is just going through the floor. The Internet essentially has usurped all that mail traffic, whether it's paying bills or what have you. So it makes perfect sense for them. I totally understand why they would want to cut back on that and keep to the package delivery for 6 days. And we're already seeing they just last week accelerated plans to consolidate processing plants from increasing the number of plants they want to downsize and consolidate from 82 to 100. And that'll save $1.2 billion. They offered three separate buyouts just in the last year or so. Last one to the clerks represented by the largest of the unions, APWU, and drawing a combined 33,600 postal employees who are leaving with a buyout. So they're doing everything they can to downsize the workforce, downsize their infrastructure, their mailing infrastructure. And squeeze every cent they have, and that's not clearly not working.
Yeah, the American Postal Workers Union had a sort of a goodbye for its clerical staff or its clerk members, and it estimated that 20,000 retired in January.
Yeah, wow,
astounding numbers. Let's see, what haven't we talked about here? What about these labor management councils? Has there been any progress movement on that?
The labor management, the partnership forums have kind of stalled in recent months. There's dissatisfaction from the leaders of the American AFGE and NTU and NEFI that federal managers on the local level aren't engaging in what they call pre-decisional involvement. Basically, they complain that these partnership councils are supposed to bring the unions in the loop when things are being, you know, new changes are being mulled over, so they can say, we tried that 10 years ago and it didn't work because XYZ. What they're saying is happening is the managers on the front line are bringing them in after the decision is all but made, and they're saying, okay, here's what we've decided, and the unions just kind of throw up their hands and say, well, what'd you bring us in here for if you've already made up your mind? So John Barry, the director of the Office of Personnel Management, has repeatedly said, no, pre-decisional means pre-decisional. You bring them in before the decision is made. And at the last meeting in January, the National Council decided to create something like a problem-solving committee that seeks to take a look at this and figure out how to resolve disputes regarding labor management partnerships when they arise. So that committee is going to get up and running this year. We'll see whether it actually does do something to fix the problem of unions being brought in the loop after all is said and done. So one thing John Barry said at the last meeting was, you know, he speculated there might have been some managers who looked at the presidential election and said, you know what, I think Mitt Romney is going to beat Obama. He's going to come in, and first thing he's going to do is, with the stroke of his pen, do away with these partnership forums, just like George W. Bush did in 2001. And Barry's message was, hey, we're going to take this hill. Obama is here for 4 more years. You're going to have to get used to it if you've been hoping for a change. These partnership councils aren't going away.
You can see why some of them would think that, though. It's happened in the past. Take a short break here, and we'll be right back on Federal News Radio.
Do you hear that? That's a satellite 500 miles above the Earth. And no, you can't hear it or see it, but it's there. With Raytheon technology that's helping to predict the weather, monitor our climate, or capture images of our planet. A lot of Raytheon solutions are actively at work in much the same way. Unseen, but unmatched. After all, when your mission is space, the possibilities are infinite. Raytheon. Customer success is our mission. Do you hear that? That's a zettabyte. The amount of data the world generates every 6 months. 5 times more data than the combined storage of every hard drive on Earth. In a sea of data this huge, Raytheon Cyber Solutions deliver security, efficiency, and resiliency. After all, when your mission is cyber, every bit matters. Raytheon. Customer success is our mission.
Here's Henry Sinkowitz, Vice Chief Information Assurance Executive, DISA, on the Federal Executive Forum on Cybersecurity, sponsored by Lockheed Martin.
As we've moved into this proactive environment, I think we're going to get much more confident as we've embedded and we've built in security all the way through and across all of the fabrics. I mean, it's a fascinating time, mm-hmm. especially as we see the onslaught of new innovation coming down the pike.
Listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group. Log on to federalnewsradio.com.
It happens millions of times every day. Cyber attacks aimed at the networks that are the brains and backbone of every government program and military mission. At Lockheed Martin, we understand the importance of cybersecurity. That's why we build security into every system we develop and integrate. Assuring that our customers can carry out their missions without disruptions is all a question of how. And it is the how that makes all the difference. Lockheed Martin. We never forget who we're working for.
What you don't know about federal pay, benefits, and retirement can cost you. Get the answers you need with a free publication from NARF, the experts on federal retirement and benefits. Download FAQs about your federal benefits today at fedfaqs.org. NARF, the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association, unravels the most complex rules and requirements feds encounter. Download your free guide today at fedfaqs.org. That's fedfaqs.org.
Listen to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM every Friday morning at 11 o'clock. Brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Fed Talk features live interviews with guests from the federal community sharing their insights on issues that affect you. Call in or email questions or comments to fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Fed Talk is sponsored by GEICO. This week on Fed Talk, host Deborah Roth will lead a roundtable discussion on the increase of telework and mobility in the federal government.
For over a century, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth in our nation's capital. The club's new STEAM initiative uses the arts to teach science, technology, engineering, and math. Today, more than ever, we need your support of STEAM. It will encourage our youth to think rather than memorize, create rather than copy, and to be resourceful rather than reserved. So visit boysandgirlsclubs.org. Send a dollar or more as an investment to help us help our kids pick up STEAM. Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, great futures start here.
This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
What are the challenges of measuring unobserved events? How do unobserved events differ from infrequent events? Are there data estimation methods that can assist public managers in measuring unobserved events? And what agencies are applying such methods to develop appropriate data-driven strategies and approaches? Join host Michael Keegan and John Whitley, author of a new IBM Center report, 5 Methods for Measuring Unobserved Events, a case study of federal law enforcement, as they explore these questions and more. Next week on a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Hear from the top of the food chain on how your agency is using technology today. Tech Tuesday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey. I'm talking with Steve Losey and Steve Watkins from the Federal Times. We had a good chat about furloughs, buyouts, the Postal Service, and all manner of things. Steve, either one of you, three weeks ago, we were gearing up for a vote that it looked like it would pass, at least in the House, that would extend the federal pay freeze or at least through this year, maybe even longer. And it's gone with the wind, and in its place is a resolution or a statement that if Congress doesn't get its job done, they will have their pay frozen.
Yeah, I'm kind of underwhelmed by this whole Congress freezing their pay because, as we know, those guys are rich. Those guys are filthy rich, and the vast majority of their income does not come from their congressional salary. So that's a hollow sacrifice, in my opinion. As for the federal pay freeze, I've lost count how many times the House has passed a pay freeze, and it always dies in the Senate. Now, right now, the pay freeze is scheduled to expire the end of March. I am wondering if, I haven't heard any rumblings, but I'm wondering if an extension of the pay freeze might be negotiated into some kind of larger package. There is no way the Senate Democrats are going to pass a standalone pay freeze, but if it comes as part of a deal, perhaps averting sequestration, perhaps as part of the, a bill to replace the expiring continuing resolution, that may happen. So right now the plan is federal employees get a half a percentage point pay raise into March, but we're just going to have to wait and see whether that is sacrificed to larger deficit reduction.
Right, efforts. And a pay raise followed immediately by furloughs, a 20% cut.
Yeah.
You had a fascinating chat with Steny Hoyer the other day, and some interesting things were said. Tell us about that.
Yeah, Steny Hoyer is known as he's the congressman from Maryland. He's a Democrat. He's known as a friend to federal employees. In his conversation with reporters, he noted the fact that federal employees are under a 2-year-plus pay freeze. New federal employees had their pension contributions increased. They've already given roughly $103 billion over the next decade or so to deficit reduction. He said federal employees have given enough. We can't keep picking federal employees' pockets. But he sort of left a little door open. He said, and I confirmed this, this is what he meant, that if there is the so-called grand bargain that President Obama has been pushing for, something that tackles the deficit problem through a combination of spending cuts and revenue increases, tax increases on the wealthy and corporations, that he would be okay with something like an extended pay freeze or cuts to federal retirement benefits if it doesn't entirely fall on federal employees' shoulders. So if there is a so-called grand bargain and it does include federal employees, Steny Hoyer, one of the most stalwart defenders of the Fed, would be okay with it.
Well, that's really a sign of the times, too, because for 8 years, Steny Hoyer on the Democratic side and Frank Wolf on the Republican side sort of played a game of whack-a-mole with the president in power. If it was Bill Clinton denying federal workers a pay raise or giving him a meager pay raise, Hoyer and an entourage, including led by John Berry, who then worked for him, they would round up support and get a higher pay raise for feds. By the same token, when George Bush was president, Frank Wolf would lead the coalition, but they worked together, and it was always getting more and better for federal workers. So if Steny Hoyer, in his current position of power, says that, that's pretty significant.
Yeah, and he did stress that if it's only hitting feds, that he's just flat out opposed to that. But it'll be interesting to see what comes over the next couple of months.
You mentioned the buyouts at Lockheed Martin and some other places. Do you know how much those buyouts are worth?
You know, I didn't see a
they usually don't say, which strikes me as interesting in a private sector situation. It may be a part. It may be a part of the salary based on their length of service or something.
Yeah,
like that.
I didn't see a figure on that.
Okay, got any predictions?
I think the retirement wave is continuing. We just got the January numbers late yesterday. January is always the biggest month for retirements, and more than 22,000 federal employees put in their retirement papers last month. That's a 3% increase over the last year. And when you go back to January 2010, that was a 38% increase. So we've seen federal retirements just tick up more and more. And I believe 2011, it was a 24% increase over the previous year. So things seem to have sort of leveled off. It wasn't 2012 wasn't quite as big a leap as we saw in 2011, but from at least the first month, and again, it's only 1 month, the retirements are still, already at a high level, still ticking up further. So I think with all this buyout and early out offers, concerns about the furlough, concerns about the pay freeze, I think we're going to see federal employees retiring again and again and again.
And you can't help but imagine that there's a calculation going on of, does it really make sense to stay? If I'm going to retire in the next year or two, I'm not getting anything more from staying in the government on my high three because of the pay freezes.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you're obviously getting salary, but the pay freeze. One thing that, as soon as I saw that 22,000 number, and an equally important number was how many applications were processed. Mm-hmm. And it was about half that number, slightly more than half.
That's right.
Were processed. So if you're getting ready to retire any time period, but particularly during this period where you're having people going out both buyouts and various for various reasons, you have an uptick in the retirements, wouldn't hurt to have about 6 months' salary saved up, would it?
That's true. And I do have to give OPM credit. We've kind of been covering this issue of delayed pension payments and since about a year ago when John Barry released his master plan for fixing the problem, the number of claims processed has gone up. Last month was more than 12,000, about the second highest that they've recorded so far. So they have made progress on that front. And while the backlog did increase last month, that was kind of to be expected. So it'll be interesting to see if they can maintain that pace and whittle that backlog down even further.
Yeah, they better. Well, listen, thank you, Steve Watkins. Thanks, Steve Losey. Thank you, Lauren Larson, for pushing the buttons and getting us done. Remember, we're here every week, every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, and we're archived on our homepage, so you can listen anytime. And today would be a particularly good show to pass on to friends because so much information about furloughs and buyouts. So have a good week. See you next Wednesday.